Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
MLB playoffs are near, and you know what that means, Alex?
Yep, Flippin' Bats will be staying up late and having all the fun.
From breaking down the most important stories and games, nobody's done what he's doing. Nobody, not even Babe Ruth.
To interviewing baseball's biggest stars.
I felt like I was pitching more stress. I was trying to be so perfect.
No one covers America's pastime like us.
So as we sprint towards this year's World Series on Fox, please make sure to listen, follow, and subscribe to Flippin' Bats with Ben Verlander and me, Alex Curry.
Baseball is fun, and so are we. We're going to have fun, dang it. We'll talk to you soon.
Welcome one and all to a bonus episode of the There Will Be Dungeon show. Yeah, that's right. It's that time of the month, and because of your support, you're getting a bonus show where we answer a bunch of questions and chat with you and for you and around you. I'm Scott Johnson, and the whole crew is here, including Bo Schwartz, who's hanging around after today's episode, which we hope everybody really liked. Bo,
hello,
hi.
Everyone.
Hello. Hi. Welcome to the bonus questions. It's been too long since we've had you one of these. Of course, John, Kristen, and Kyle and myself, Scott, are all here. We're going to dive right in. We'll let Kristen rope us in on what questions we're doing. So, Kristen, take it away.
Okay, first two are for you, Scott. Whatever happened to the mouse Splendorbot was feeding in his room at the temple? He should have named it Spud, just my 2 cents. And then the follow-up question by someone else, what did Crandall name the little mouse?
So the mouse is still there, but like mice, he's not like a familiar, you know, who hangs out and sleeps in a drawer next to my bed or anything weird like that. He comes and goes, mostly comes for the food, isn't afraid of me, but is otherwise just sort of a stray creature. I call him Mouse. That's his name, Mouse. Real simple. So it's like, oh, it is Mouse. And I give him a little pinch of a potato, and he's very happy when we do that. So not a super exciting answer, but, you know, some people probably had hoped that he would show up on my shoulder and cast spells of his own one day, but that's not going to happen. He's just a mouse.
Spud is a good name, though.
Spud's a great name. I probably should have done that, but in my head, he just
tater
went,
tot.
Oh, it's his mouse again.
Tater Tot's also really good.
Yeah. Or even just Tater would have been good.
Next one is aimed at Kyle here. What would the plan have been if a player had wanted to play an elf or elven blood in the campaign, with how part of the plot seems to involve those?
Oh, it would have been completely different. This plot was based on Ko, because he was the most established character when we sort of put them together. He wanted to, I mean, granted, I didn't find out till level 3 about the psychic sort of thing, but there was the sick wife going on, and I knew that she was half elf, and that Ko was looking for, or at least desired to find, some sort of cure for her. And then there was this kind of holy party thing going on. But that's all influenced by you guys. So of course you did that very first mission. You're all like, whoa, Underdark, whoa, this is cool. What's that sound? I want to know more about this. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll experiment around a little bit. So we went and did the Crypt of Cord with all the undead and the ghosts and stuff. And to be perfectly honest, nobody used Turn Undead that day. Nobody used any anti-undead powers, mm-hmm. Of which we had multiple.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like, okay, so we're not doing an undead campaign. And that's kind of how campaigns work in my book, is you sort of shotgun for a little bit. You go, how's this? What do you think of this? What do you think? As someone goes, zombies, I love zombies. You go, okay. You know, what do you think of zombies? And like, I'm more for like plant zombies, anyone? And now you're down that path. So it evolved over time. If someone had picked an elf, the elf thing wouldn't have mattered. It would have been more about his wife's ailment, less so about the hereditary drone, as we called it.
Well, as a follow-up, listening to everybody, would have chosen anything except for like orcs or half orcs, would you have said, oh, okay, I could do this, but I'll just do it with a different race, I can have them be this major plot point? And I mean, would it have been that simple, or was there something about elves that jumped out at you and you went, well, not only did nobody pick one, but also this would be a great idea. You know what I mean? Like that inspired you at all?
It's a little bit of a mix, right? Because here it was you had the elven sickness that was afflicting Ko's wife. And at the same time, you have the Underdark. And while I've been very careful might be the right word, I think on like a base level, drow are kind of lame, kind of boring, but I love what like Hellboy did with evil elves. And even Thor, to an extent, had kind of the evil pale elves. But like Hellboy's elves were badass, still that kind of drow ancient feel, but they weren't so dristy, to be perfectly honest.
Well, dristy is not a, that's a good way of putting it. So you agree with me that Hellboy 2 was a better movie than Hellboy 1? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
That was a bold leap, but yeah.
2 is awesome. A lot of people don't feel this way.
I see you like elves from Hellboy. Therefore, you must like Hellboy 2 more than Hellboy
2
1.
Is so elvish, like Hellboy elvish, and compared to the first one. The first one didn't really dabble in it, but that second movie, man, people don't realize how cool that movie is. It's good. I wish
for your question about like, would I just run with the orcs? Maybe. Yeah. You know, if Ko's wife was an orc and like there kind of was that through line there. But yeah, then orcs evolved in this whole new thing because Splendor Belt showed up and that led to Zoldar the Wizened being of the same sort of tribe. So he was the character he was. It's all
right.
It's all inspired by.
So final follow up on this. And this can be both you and Bo answer this as experienced DMers. How often do you feel tempted to make sure that there's racial conflict in your campaign? In other words, you've got this pantheon of races and conflict exists there in the lore already, but you know, you're making your own lore. How often are you like, oh, we really got to play up the, you know, these dwarves and these whatevers hate each other and that sort of thing?
I mean, D&D is somewhat based on, you know, medieval history. Just not, I realize there's other worlds and stuff, but, you know, there's the Hundred Years' War where, you know, a whole bunch of people fought with a whole bunch of other people all the time, constantly bickering. And that makes for a great milieu for action. So I think there are factions and tribes, both racial or religious or for whatever reason, that's always an ever-present fact that they're competing groups.
Right.
But I don't pre-plan it that way. I just, you know, you get one group and you're like, well, they're not going to like other groups. And in particular, the heroes. But I don't think about it too deeply, I guess.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's an interesting, I mean, it's something that evolved kind of naturally. And of course, you have like the romance of Legolas and Gimli as they slowly become friends and how different and disproportionate that is to the rest of Lord of the Rings because they hate each other. But that's all very played out in some ways. So I think that it's kind of an interesting take in this world that it comes from somewhere ancient, that the plague that has beset the elves in the Delver's world is a force of that other world, because ultimately it's a city, it's a guild. Nobody really cares. Carrie's working the desk just like anybody. No one's like, you hell spawn, get out of here. She's like making little, you know, inventions in the back. Like the city environment has led to that overall, everybody being accepted and everyone part of this adventuring sphere. But when the age old sort of ancient powers invade, that's where you can have that drama still.
Mm. Yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. It's just interesting. Is like, it's hard probably as storytellers or stereo tellers to completely avoid it, because you could argue the game itself is based on this concept of difference and then finding common ground because you're adventuring together. Or, you know, maybe these little tiny tiefling looking things aren't as weird as I thought they were, because here we are fighting this together. And I just wonder how tempting that is for, you know.
Yeah, it depends on the milieu. Like if we're doing Planescape, like everyone hangs out with everyone else and they're divided by factions, not by race. But right. If you're doing old medieval style, like the examples that Kyle already gave, then, you know, maybe the elves hate the dwarves, and the fact that you're an elf and a dwarf in a party together is what makes it special, because it's not an everyday thing.
Right.
It just depends on the the fiction you're going for, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's a thing that D&D in general has been trying to combat recently, and, you know, everybody's going to have an opinion on how well and how successful that is, but I mean, we made the joke here, Dristy with Dark Elves, and even R.A. Salvatore recently got a lot of notoriety for coming out and saying, yeah, I think it's kind of a weird world we've ended up creating with this, where it's like there's one good one and everyone else is bad. Mm. So I think you've got a lot of creators that are like kind of reexamining the tropes that we've all kind of fallen into, and kind of wondered, is there something more interesting we can do with it?
Yeah. Well, and it's cheap, you know, like ultimately that's not, I mean, like pushing the envelope, but it's just not creative. Mm, if yeah. you just play into everybody hating each other when they walk in the door because they got demon horns. Mm-hmm. There are other reasons for these characters to interact that would be way more interesting in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's just interesting because video games maybe are worse at this. They're, you know, if you're an orc, you're not a human, so let's go. We're fighting. And it's a little simple.
It's like an enemy type thing. Like, and their lore is building a story around. There's this one dude, and he's a blue dude, and the blue dude's got to kill the green dudes and the red dudes.
Yeah.
Then you get a lore guy in there, be like, why is he killing the blue and the green red dudes? Well, it's because they're all racist against blue dudes. So yeah. He's on the side of, like, Nazis are the classic video game Wolfenstein enemy, right? It's right. Just like they're. If you really think about it, they're people and murder's horrible and why are we shooting people? But you just, you know, for the, I think in video games that shorthand is there, but like in D&D, everything's narrative. So you can still, I think, play a game that's like, what are the monsters? Well, you're killing elves. Why am I killing elves? Who cares? We're just playing D&D. But if you're doing something, if there's an answer, if there's a narrative behind it, then there's going to be a reason and it might be race related and it might not.
Hmm.
And, I think we're seeing lots of different franchises move away from that too, not just D&D. Like, you know, you have the sort of older storytelling, it's called World of Warcraft, that is very much you kill the enemy. The enemy is bad. You kill them. But we're seeing more modern MMOs like Final Fantasy do a lot of redemption arcs where you get to know the bad guy and they change their mind or they become purified in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, redemption arcs in the actual interactions the players have is unusual. It's okay. You'll see it a lot on top down type stuff, like the big bosses of the world or the big characters that you never really play. You just watch them do their thing. In gaming, they tend to have all the redemption arcs and the really nuanced emotional experiences, but your job is to kill the dude with a red line over his head. And so you do that. You know, there's no.
So it sounds like if we do the Waste campaign again, you want to go to the Goblin City and hang out with them, make peace with goblins.
No, definitely.
No,
not.
They stink. No. They're
racist.
Yeah.
we've met several, and none of the interactions have been good. We can be proven wrong.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that like it's a hard line in the sands of like, you know, maybe it's just outliers. Maybe we just met crazy weird goblins in Bok-Bok, like. But that's our sample size.
Yeah.
And so if you were like, hey, you guys want to go meet more goblins? Be like, no, because our history with goblins is they try to throw rocks at us and kill us and at best come and vigorously masturbate near us. 100% of our experience with goblins.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
I remember that. It was funny.
It's hard to have a more nuanced view on goblins when that's all they've done. So we'll get there, maybe. Never say never.
Okay.
tying to the elven bloodline thing, so why doesn't the drone affect Ko's daughter? She would be half-elf, right?
Correct. So that yet hasn't been revealed why Ko's wife was exposed to the drone as early as she was before it started becoming a problem in the city. Obviously, it was in the underground, as your very first mission showed off, but it has not been revealed why that happened yet. But if it were to, like, explode across the town, which it did, and if it were to reach that sort of height, I think that's just kind of where I might draw the line as a DM a bit. Mm. You know, Witcher doesn't let you attack kids. It's just, to me, my sort of big line has been, like, the sun causes cancer. That sucks. This is a fantasy world. Let's not have to wear sunscreen.
Right.
So
it's good.
You're outside. You want to go in the bar and you want to be like, hey, you know, getting on. Fine. I'm not going to include venereal diseases in my world because it's frankly a bit of a bummer. Right.
And it's Kyle's world for the record.
Yes.
We're gonna
draw a line here.
Yeah.
I have venereal diseases in mind. But the point is well taken. You draw your line somewhere.
The wastes, everybody's afraid to do anything.
I mean, we picked up boots that had feet fall out of them today. There was a dude crushed like a burrito. Like there is violence and there's sadness, but there's just kind of a natural sort of agreement, I think, where you just kind of draw certain lines. And one of them is the sun. And I don't want to get a sunburn or get cancer from it.
Well, and I think Kyle probably looks at me and goes, oh, there's John. He's a new dad. I was that recently. Maybe let's not give him the existential crisis that would be, hey, your fake child's now in extreme danger.
Yeah.
That's a good point. How do you feel, D&D player? Feel taken advantage of?
Yeah. Whereas everybody, I would just like to make it clear, everybody in the waste has venereal disease of some sort. So just
pretty much
put that out there.
Everyone.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I definitely go over the line of propriety sometimes. And sometimes it's a good idea in my head. And then we do it. And I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Like, this has been number of examples.
Well, is it? You know, is
everyone's
it
there to have a good time. So you just discuss it if someone's over the line and totally cool with.
Is it easier to end up over that line if it's a certain. Like, if you're playing Cyberpunk, it feels like that world, I mean the pen and paper, not the video game, but that world.
Rated R, yeah.
Yeah, it takes you to.
Well, that's a different, yeah, like, I mean, you could probably, you know, I mean, if it's about crime, you could do the cruise out to get information and bust a pedophilia ring. I mean, that's what they do in the first episode of Mr. Robot. That's how you're introduced to the character. Mm-hmm. And that's not quite a cyberpunk, but it's a hackery kind of show.
Right.
Certainly, you could get that hardcore and do something that serious. And if everyone's good with it, then it's fine. But you do got to, you know, especially if we're doing it publicly for consumption, it's something you got to tread a little more carefully, just not to trigger people. But I don't think there are rules about that, apart from what's fun for everyone at the table. Mm-hmm. I just think when Kyle's talking about sun doesn't give cancer, it's like you only have so much mental energy and so much time. And if you're spending a D&D session in the hospital getting chemotherapy, like if you're reduced to 4 hours of chemotherapy appointments, no one's probably having fun at that point. So the point is well taken that some stuff is not because we couldn't, it's a simulation of everything, but it's kind of a shorthand to get to the fun bits of the simulation and not do the, you know, either the too depressing stuff or the too crunchy stuff, too real life stuff.
It's also just the red button effect, which is there's a red button on the wall. Everyone spends 20 minutes wondering what to do with it. Like if you were like, hey, you wake up this morning and your skin's like peeling off and they'd be like, oh, my God, we fought. What did we fight recently that did this to me? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, I need magical salves and potions. Like, nah, just take a couple days off and put on some stuff. But, you know. Mm-hmm.
I mean, not connected to this anyway, but I've decided to put off my one-off campaign of trips to the hospital to get my chemotherapy appointments. We're going to change that.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
It's healthcare RPG.
Yeah, our healthcare RPG I was planning. I'm going to go back to the drawing board.
Patients and surgeries. It's a great
what a good time that would be. Holy crap. Hey, I noticed something here. I noticed that Kristen skipped a question that was about her. It says, Mala says, was Grinkeeper's story always meant to essentially be Sailor Moon? You got
to
answer that.
I was just trying to tie the two, but the answer to that is yes, because there are lots of character tropes out there, right? And so I wanted to play with the whole magic girl one, since that was a big part of my childhood and my sister's childhoods. And so I got to searching, and interestingly enough, the internet voted that she's a paladin, just straight up, everyone said she's a paladin. And then there's argument as to what type of paladin she is. But she's dumb as rocks, but she believes in herself to the point where she can sacrifice herself at the end of every season and get reborn again. So how do you take that and turn it into a character? Sure.
Are you surprised someone noticed that it was probably what you were channeling a little bit? No. Or?
No? Not at all. I've tried to make it as obvious as possible without being annoying.
That's hilarious, because I have to admit, because I don't know if this should be embarrassing or what this says about me, but a couple of years ago I thought Sailor Moon was purely pornographic, something like porno anime. I thought it was anime porn. Now I know there's anime porn of everything, right? Like if you want to go find it for any video game you played or anything else, it exists. But for some reason, I had in my head that that's all that ever was, and it's obviously not. And my daughter
was it the word moon that got you?
I don't know what. I think someone just told me once, like back in the 90s when I worked somewhere, they're like, "Oh yeah, watch out for that Sailor Moon stuff. It's pretty gnarly stuff in there." And I remember going, "Oh,
you never
okay."
Saw it on TV. It was on like every day after school. No, and stuff.
Dude, I got every day after school was G.I. Joe and Transformers and Super Friends and stuff. Like, yeah. I didn't the anime. Oh, we did. We had a what's the one where they all joined together? A bunch of tiger parts. What's it called? Voltron.
Oh, Voltron. Voltron.
Voltron.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of Voltron. I watched a lot of G-Force. So those are about the most anime things I had growing up. For whatever reason, that's just what I had. Everything else was very Western, and I think that one just passed me by. I just didn't ever see it. But my sisters laugh at me now. They're like, "Oh yeah, I love that." I'm like, "Well, no one told me. I was told it was porn in like '95." So anyway, well, I guess what I'm saying is I don't know what I'm saying. I'm saying congratulations on not only making this character a true homage to that, but also for reminding me that it's not all porn, that not all anime is porn. There.
I try to do my best.
I'm glad.
A question for everyone. Now that you've had a couple of different classes between the two campaigns, any new class that you'd like to try out?
Oh my gosh.
Warlock.
I want to try Cleric really badly. It's been kind of something that I've like had my eye on for a good long while. It was going to be a multi-class option for Stanley till Bo completely ruined that. And it's kind of been in the back of my head for a while.
Well,
and
you have to have a god.
A stupid god. So it was, it's just something that, you know, I'd never do it in a bow campaign, but I would.
My stringent requirement to make you have a deity associated with your class.
No, it's for exactly what happened, because eventually you're going to meet that deity and Bo's going to be like, "Yeah, you've dedicated your life to this thing and you live by a creed and it's awesome. And here it comes."
Not sure.
I think he's awesome, but okay.
It is a class I've been curious about, and I'm super. It would have been rogue until this campaign. So
well, now that he's seen how poorly he sees how poorly a cleric can be played. Now he's got ideas on how he might improve that. Is that what's going on? That's how it is.
Well, I mean, he could switch. We could talk about it. Maybe he no longer worships Malhaya. Maybe he worships a better, cooler god.
No. That boat has sailed. I think Bo has
Brett's
destroyed any hope of religion for Stanley ever in the history of ever. He met a god and he was like, "I'm done.
Yeah, no gods. I'm out. They're not cool."
He created Gore the God Butcher. I met my god and then realized all gods need to die.
Well, I mean, you don't. It also is. It's DM. It's up to the DM how stringent they want to be about that particular bent on the rules, right? Like Kyle's well, I wonder, Kyle, if I came to you and said, "Yeah, really not feeling Paylor, I want to make up a god and his name is Larry and he's the god of oil changes or whatever," what would you have said? Like, you'd probably have said, "Well, that's
oh hell yeah, yeah." but that's also because that's a really cool plot device, because changing gods, then you have like the gods vying for power. The best representation that I love of gods is from Black and White. If you ever played that game.
Oh yeah. The monkey who flung poo is what I called that game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. But like gods are based on their actual power and their presence. Their very existence is based on worshipers. So the more worshipers you have, the more powerful you are.
Right.
And if you have no worshipers, you get forgotten in time. You get lost in time and space, like in Black and White. So as someone giving up and changing gods is a really big deal. Yeah. And you either have to escape them. You have to hide from your previous god who might like hunt you down because they gave you all those favors. Mm-hmm. Your crops would be in peril. Yeah. Like it'd be rough.
Yeah.
Well, you really have to gain favor with the other god to protect you too, right? Like
exactly. Cause they want to smote you.
Yeah. Cause if you left a god and then had no god, you get smote.
Even a good god like Paylor?
Yeah, what would Paylor do? Would he just be like, oh, it's
because
okay.
Because his realm isn't vengeance, right?
Well, that depends where we're going, right? But we were talking about the god of diesel or something like that. What was going on?
Larry.
God of oil changes.
Oh, Larry, the god of oil.
Affordable oil changes. These are important.
What does Larry think of a follower that just abandoned his previous god? Like, you know, you're going to put your trust in somebody that was like, well, I was a follower of Paylor, and I just decided, you know, oil changes is where my mind's at. You know, is that the follower you give all the power to?
Yeah. I think, well, if you leave the oil changes guy, all you do is risk some bad viscosity in your engine. So it's fine. It's not a big deal. He doesn't smite you. You just have a shitty car.
Everything you touch rusts.
Yeah. All rust. Bad lubrication. Your spark plugs lock up. Yeah. I know how this goes. All hail the great god of that also goes
again, kind of like the story thing we were talking about there. Like, if your story became you wanted to change gods, then the gods would get really Olympian because now that's something I can feed on and use in your story. Oh, so the gods would get really jealous. They'd be very vindictive because that's what I was given to work with, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's consistent with what they're like in D&D, but also in mythology in general, right? They're never, you know, too very benevolent. And if they are, it's in conflict with another god's take, which is like even modern theology is often this two-sided coin. Well, here's God here and here's the devil here. A bad guy, but still kind of a god, and a god who's not a bad guy, but they can't seem to get it together, and there's a war in hell and heaven, and we, you know, the whole thing's a big Diablo mess. Like, it kind of is in everything. And so I get why it is what it is, but
I think the key distinction I've noticed just with the cleric over other classes is that on some level, no matter how evil you are, you're a servant, whether it's the nature of that service is different. Like, if you're good, you probably do it willingly. If you're evil, you probably begrudge to God, but still serve it because you're beholden to them. But on some level, you are a servant. And I think, like, when a lot of people play D&D, when I notice when we're talking about making their characters or whatever, they want to do what they want to do, which is every other class. And when they talk about becoming a cleric, it's like, no, you're a person of faith, whether it's evil, faith. If you're a murderer, if you worship a murderous god, you see an innocent child, and your god demands a sacrifice, then you have to do it or you are in the wrong. And so, like, it's a service class. As much as they have cool stuff, I feel like there's no case where your RP isn't serving whatever god it is that you're serving, because that's how you obtain your favor and power.
Right.
So it's an important thing to keep in mind when it comes to cleric, I feel.
Sure, sure.
No, that's how religion works.
Well, just like religion. No, that's a bad comparison. Just like religion, you go to church, and like that, you finish the bonus show. I had no good transition there. So.
Your God demands the show is over.
Yep, it's over. So that's it. Thank you for sending us your questions. We'll look for more of this next week. You can send us replies on Twitter. You can do it on our Discord. You can say it in all kinds of places, including a link that's on the page itself at therewillbedungeons.com. And we'll be bugging you for more of those coming up soon. But big thanks for your support, or else there is no bonus show. I think that's it. We're done. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on There Will Be Dungeons.